And so that you can understand me, take my retainers out. I really have a hard time speaking with any kind of housing. What happened was I had a little tooth that came down 2 years ago, and it knocked out two teeth, so then they had to pull my teeth over. Can you believe a baby tooth came down?
Oh, my God.
That's all this time. They thought it wouldn't move, but it did. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so did you talk to Dr. Ramirez about what you both remembered about how the La Chicana course?
She said she remembered it was started when she was chair, so it was probably in the '80s, late '80s,
uh-huh.
And it started because.
In the late 80s?
Yes, I believe it was in the 80s.
Okay, I found it in the catalog in 79 through 81 catalog.
Right, yeah. Okay, then it was then. She thought it was 80s. Okay, I don't remember. I know it was a long time ago. And she was chair, and it started because some Chicana students came and asked for a class, and the original conversation started because they were a little concerned about, in some Chicano studies classes, things that were indicated that were very traditional and were not in line with the changing role of the woman. And so they felt that, fine, some professors may feel that way, but we would like a place where we can talk and look at the role of the Latinas changing, not static. So that's how it got started.
So, and Dr. Ramirez asked you to teach.
Right, because she knew I was, well, the reason I'm sure she approached me, first of all, she was the only Latina in the department at the time, and I was not in the department, but I taught courses over there. I taught Chicano in education, for example, and she knew that because of my activities and some things I've written, that that's an area of my interest and concern, so she asked if I'd like to teach it. That's how it started.
Okay.
And however, it is now being offered, but they do now have an expanded pool of part-timers and others who are able to do so. Plus, I don't have time anymore in which I'm able to teach another department. See, to teach another department, you must have the permission of your department chair, and it must be a given that what you would have taught here, they don't need taught. Well, right now, because of cuts in resources, we have less faculty than we need. And so if I were to leave and not teach a course that they need here in my department, it wouldn't get taught. So I couldn't get permission now to leave. You know what I mean? That's the way it goes.
So what did you read in that course, in that first course? And what were the lectures like?
Okay, well, I tried to get literature that dealt with our roots as women of Mexican descent. We didn't have the heterogeneous Latino population we have now. It was pretty much Mexican American. Right now we have a lot of Cubanas and others, you know, expanded Central Americans because of change in migration patterns to the state. But at that time, pretty much, if you were a Latina, you were Mexican American on this campus. And so we looked at some of the works that were written by women through the history of the Mexican people and written about, like Bernal Díaz del Castillo, The Conquest of Mexico, which tells a lot about Doña Marina, who I told you about before, and then the writings of Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. Also writings that are contemporary writings from Mexico, some in Spanish, some in translation, because not all the young women are familiar with Spanish. And then using the poetry and the narratives being written currently by Chicano authors like Bless Me Ultima by Rodolfo Chavez, and of course the epic poem Yo Soy Joaquin, I Am Joaquin, and using that as a basis to look at what has been written about us and how does that really compare and coincide with reality today for us as women. And also looking at issues that face us and looking at them in the sense of other women, majority culture women, are looking at the same issues, but for them, sometimes the answers are different. Like one issue that the students found very different in their approach was their relationship to their men. They felt that feminists from majority culture saw the man as the enemy. The Latinos saw him as one who's also oppressed. And so their attitude was different. Another thing, too, was the way you look at sexism. Feminist movement is fighting sexism, but for the Chicana, she felt she was fighting sexism within the context of racism, and that the two went together. And in fact, sometimes her racist oppressor was a white woman who was fighting for her own freedom. So it gets very complicated and messy. We have, as I said, different approaches as to who we want to be and who our heroes or heroines are. Chicana would say, you know, my heroine is not Gloria Steinem, and my heroine is Dolores Huerta. And so to understand that there will be a different way, a different agenda, a different calendar that the women have. Also, the notion of support. Like, I know one of my students wrote a paper, and she let one of her friends read it, and her friends got upset. She wrote a paper of why she at the time was supporting Richard Alatorre for a position in government in this legislature, and he was being opposed at that time and the position was going to be opposed by a white female. And her friend, who was a feminist, felt that if you're really for women, then you must support the woman. And the student felt, I support women, but I also support my men. You know, Latinos have also been denied access to power, and so I'm support, you know, and she said to her, I remember, you have to make a choice. And she said, that's not fair. You know, you're asking me an unfair, and she said, what'll happen is if you always force me to make a choice, you know, can I support a Latino over a white female? If you put it in those words, that I'm going to end up going against you, and then we will not be together. There has to be an understanding that in sisterhood we may have different objectives and goals. And I think with the Latina, what I found as the students interviewed women, etc., they found that their goals were not as focused and narrow as the white feminists. They were broader and communal. As one woman said who was interviewed by a student, I don't have the luxury of dealing with, quote, women's issues. I have to deal with the issues of my community. And as I do that, I am dealing with women's issues. For example, I need to deal with police brutality, which we have in East LA. And so that's an issue that involves women but also involves men. So what that was one thing that came out, that the concerns they had were not as focused on gender. Gender was within the whole thing. You know what I mean? It was integrated, but it wasn't as focused. And the feeling was there are a lot of things that white women have that we don't have, and so it's part of that struggle that is part of our struggle, which is communal. For example, a white woman may not be able to have a high power job and a high standard of living, but because she's married to a white male, she'll have it. Whereas we, married to our male, are going to be living at a poverty level. So there's certain differences, you know. So there was a concern at the time of a lack of understanding between the two groups, and the fact that I think we've moved that way. I think things have gotten better in that people can understand you can be part of the same cause and the same movement, but you don't have the same goals. Is how it's going to work best for you within your community.
So do you think there were connections being made between, or to what extent were there connections being made between the Chicanas who were active in?
I think that has come, but I think this, when I was teaching it, we were at step one, which was dealing with yourself within your own community. So we weren't yet at the outreach point.
Uh-huh.
You're not able to deal with others when their thing is different. When you are not at the same base. And so because of this, it was felt that we had to look, what they had to deal with is who am I? And a lot of it was not just gender, it was racial. Because we sort of swung pendulum-wise. Traditionally, the Mexican people, because it was quote-unquote more acceptable, have focused on their European heritage and their being Spanish. And that's much better than saying you're Indian. But we are what John Wayne would refer to as half-breeds. We're part of the mestizaje, which means Indian and Spanish and European. And that's not usually looked upon as being very cool. And yet we have been told by Jose Vasconcelos that we as a people should recognize who we are and that we are Indian and we are European. And the image used in Mexico is that it's a Spanish father and an Indian mother is the image portrayed because of the soldiers who came. Unlike other settlers in North America, in the United States, where they came as families, it was the Spanish male as a soldier who came for God's golden glory without the intent of settling down and bringing his family here. It was, most of them did not do that. But as Jose Vasconcelos said, you know, like for example, we have Columbus Day, and that's a big day for us, and we call it El Día de la Raza, the Day of Our People. And the idea of it is that for us, when we celebrate Columbus Day, it's that we are celebrating the marriage between two people, that a new people was created, Indian and European, and that is what is symbolized by the coming of Columbus, that this new heritage was developed, and that's called La Raza, my people. And when you hear the word race or raza in English, it just sounds, I don't know, sort of cold. Not cool, you know what I mean? But in Spanish, raza is a very loving, feeling, caring kind of word. You know, viva la raza, long live my people. And it's meant in a good sense. So that notion of Jose Vasconcelos refers to la raza cosmica, the cosmic people. And that he would hope, which of course we have a long way to go in this country and the whole world, that this was a symbol of what the whole world could do, that you could come together as different peoples and become one so that we would not have strife and hatred and racism and all these kinds of things. But so in terms of the Chicana, she first had to look to who am I as a person. And for example, a Chicana is not a Mexicana. Mexicana is a woman from Mexico. Chicana is the people who are born here and who are born here in our Mexican ancestry. Chicano and Chicana is sort of a political statement, and it's a statement of pride, like black, African American, that kind of thing. And so first, when you deal with this particular course, what you have to deal with for understanding of your history, what has happened to us as women, as a community, as a people, and then coming, looking today, you know, who are we really? And those of us who live in this country, in this society, and what is our status? What is our situation? What's happening to us? What are the issues that confront us? Like, you know, for white feminists, one issue that I don't imagine is a big one with them, but it certainly is with us, is immigration. And that's a big issue with us. And so that there are different issues. See, now, it's sort of like within those issues that other things come out. For example, because of legislation that's now being pushed, for example, Gingrich with his contract on America, is proposing that even legal not be allowed any kind of, you know, sustenance support. So that, for example, that we get rid of prenatal programs, you know. Well, you know, this does affect women. So within these broader issues is where the Latina finds her issues, if not separate and apart. Also, I think it's a cultural thing because we are very much a cultural people in the sense of family. And it's really, really important. And that, too, can sometimes be a problem for young Latinas who grow up in the traditional culture. If their family's very assimilated, it may not be a problem. For example, we are brought up to be interdependent, not to be independent. And so when we make decisions, frequently we do it for what's best for all of us, for the group. And if something is better for my whole family, then I'm expected to do it that way, not for what's just best for me alone. That we're not individualistic film. And that can be a problem, for example, for a young girl who's brought up to be interdependent, and then she's encouraged, and, you know, like a young woman from another culture, to go out on her own, to go to college, you know, et cetera. Some can't do that because they were never brought up that way. Others whose family's been there longer can't because they've taken on some of these traits. So it depends, a lot depends on how long you have been away from your migration to this part of the world, as to what you have taken on is different from your original traditional culture. So this is an area that can cause a problem. We have also the situation that what is the appropriate role for the woman. This is something that all women have to deal with, but we find that with our people, we have a much greater push frequently from the family to have the woman be traditional. And so it is a very difficult struggle for the young woman to begin to move out and to be more independent, in which, you know, she needs to be supportive in that. So when you take a course in those days and you were looking at La Chicana, a lot of it was looking to who am I, where am I, to deal with the fact of the situation in which we live today, the issues that face us, the issues that are important, and how we're going to handle them, and to make our own choices and not let others decide for us, that we are people who will make the decision, and to realize, too, how others perceive us, and the stereotypes, etc., and to be able to deal with that, and to recognize, which hits me all the time, you know, how frequently when you're a minority, you're never really seen as an American. Like, you frequently hear in conversation, you know, was it American? Oh, no, it wasn't American, it was a Mexican. And yet that Mexican may have lived here for three generations, but see, we never are, quote, American. Like, I'll never forget when I taught in a high school in East L.A., one of the teachers there had moved to this country from Scotland. She was teaching our school. Well, she'd been here 1 year, she was from Scotland. And she asked me if I knew such and such a girl. And she was trying to get a hold of her, and I said, well, what does she look like? And she said, well, you know, she's foreign-looking, like all the kids in this school. And I thought, these are kids who are native-born U.S. citizens, and you, I know, consider yourself not, quote, foreign-looking. But it's that kind of attitude that is part of what a Chicano or Latino will face. And that's part of kind of the world that she has to deal with. So there are many things that are different in her world than that of other women. And that's one of the things that we have to face. The other thing, though, too, is that sometimes we play games. Like one thing that I've heard women do, and it really upsets me, Miss Latina. Like I remember one woman doing this, and she had a PhD and was educated, and it was something, a male was challenging her. You know, frequently the thing that a male can say to a Chicano male can say to a Chicano female, play a guilt trip on her, and that is to say, you sound like a white woman, or you're acting like a white woman. In other words, you're not really part of us anymore, you lost your culture, etc. And they will do it frequently when you do things that they don't like, that are too independent or too feminist, you know. And so I remember one guy saying this to this friend of mine, and her response was, oh no, I'm not like them. I'm like Chicana. I'm not like them, you know. And yet what he was putting her down for were things that I felt that she did support and should support. But in order not to be seen as, quote, not one of us, she was negating her support for things that she really did support and say, oh no, I'm not like them. I don't believe in it. You know, I'm Chicana. I thought, oh, it's a cop out, you know. And I have this very dear friend, and I will quote him by name. He's one of the top authors in the Chicano movement, Rudy Acuna. And Rudy, who's a dearly beloved friend, has frequently said to me, Consuelo, you're fine as a Chicana. You really are, except for one thing, that's your role as a woman. And I said, well, that's what I am, sweetie. He's not on it. He says, if only you'd understand that you must support the man. You must walk behind him. You don't want to be fast. No, no. I says, as long as the man needs me to walk behind him to be secure, he is not secure. He's weak. I says, a man of strength is one who accepts me as his equal. And Rudy is really good to me and really nice. You know, it's not at all that he just perceives that our roles should be different because I am female, he is male. Or like I remember one time there was some office in some organization and I was going for it and so was this dear friend of mine, a Latino, going for it. And this guy came and wanted me to drop out. And I said, why? Because you're a woman. He says, how can you go against him in this election? I said, because I think I'm capable. I think he's capable. I said, whoever wins, great. I says, you know, if Sal wins, hey, I'll be the first to congratulate him and I'll mean it. And I expect that if I win, Sal should do likewise. But it's that kind of thing that I think Latinas have to face and be able to be strong about. And sometimes it's hard. I remember once this one very dear friend of mine, we were at a public setting, and he and I disagreed very vigorously. And this was in a mixed crowd, mixed being racially mixed, on some issue. Really, we really went head to toe on it. And later when he talked to me about it, he was really upset. He had tears in his eyes because I, in front of these galachos, in front of the Sangos, had challenged him. And I said, you got to understand, that doesn't mean him challenging you as a person. It means that I disagree with your ideas. But like one thing I do know I have to do with someone like that is when something like that happens, then as soon as I can, I need to find a time when I'll say, hey, come on, let's go have a cup of coffee, get on, you know, whatever. Just do something social, friendly, and warm, which says, hey, I love you. Don't take it so personal. But and I don't know if it's part of the machismo thing or what, but some of the men really find that hard. And the role that we should assume. And but you have to be sensitive and caring and be supportive of them. But I think it's important that still you hold your line. And when you do disagree, that you do it in a positive way, where you make it work. It's the issue, it is not the personality. You know, you got to really, really watch that. And so, see, some of the things that we talked about and dealt with, and one, I think I told you, one of the really neat things the students did in that class was to take an older woman and write her story. You know, it was really great, really great. And because they didn't understand how the previous generation, what they had been through. A lot of them in their families, the previous generation, were the immigrants, you know, and what they went through coming across the border, and or what it was like when they lived in such poverty in a small town in Mexico, et cetera, you know, or during the Civil War in Mexico and so on. So they found a lot of her story that they didn't know about, you know, and appreciate. So that was another piece that was really important.
So in that class, what was the mix of men and women and the mix racially?
It was pretty much Chicana. There might be a couple of males. And usually the males who came were those who were very much together and were there for wanting to learn, wanting to hear, wanting to know more. We never had any males who were there to, sort of cause problems and harass them or whatever. And the females the same, but there were very few non-Latino females. I think that what happens, and this has been traditionally so, because, see, you're in an environment, in a minority class, an ethnic set of class, in which the members really feel they can just lay it out, you know. Can we talk? And they talk, and that's going to be pretty harsh. And they can be very critical of other groups. And they feel safe to do it, which they wouldn't do it in Lit 102 when it's two of them and the rest are non-Hispanic. So I think in an ethnic studies class, the students come out and are brutally honest and say things they never say elsewhere. And they know the group there will understand and will have a lot of sympathy for what they're saying. And I think that frequently it's very uncomfortable if you're not a member of that group to go into a black studies class or a Latino class. And so it's sort of sad because when you go into Latino classes, et cetera, usually the people there are people of that group and others don't. That's what they're trying to do with the interdisciplinary classes, to try to get people to go into areas where they normally would not have participated. But I can see where, like, you know, if you went into a class on lesbian lifestyles, if you were straight and didn't feel comfortable wondering more about that lifestyle, they might come out with some statements and pick up your vibes and not be too gentle with you. And no one wants to get hurt. No one wants to be put down. And to be put down when you know 99% of them are in green with a put down laid on you. Or where sometimes people can come out with statements in which they condemn you, who symbolizes the group you belong to, and is not necessarily in any way one who acts out these things you're speaking to, you know. So I think that's why we have this isolation in terms of going to a class like that. Have you ever been to a Chicana class or Black Studies?
I had a Black Studies class.
Now, how was it for you?
Well, it was a summer school class, and there are probably 10 of us, and so it was like, it was really racially mixed.
Okay,
like,
that's unusual,
I wasn't
like
the only white woman.
Well, I think that's happened more. Did you take it for an interdisciplinary course? Or was
No, I took it for entrance.
Okay, okay. Did you find that any of the students tended to be harsh against the white students?
No, but it was a summer school class, and there wasn't a lot of discussion, as much discussion as I would have liked.
Okay,
you know? So
okay.
Maybe my experience was
different, not typical. I think also that probably there's less of that than there used to be, you know. Different from when there were the Day of the Panthers, for example, that movie. One thing they say the movie doesn't show is the violence that did exist at that time. You know, so they sort of softened it. But, I think times have changed in terms of ethnic aesthetics, too. Any other questions?
Let's see. So did the role of Do you think the role of Chicanas changed with that course? The role of Chicanas on campus changed with that course, or how do you think that course affected
I don't think you can say it affected the movement. I think it more affected individual lives.
Uh-huh.
As I think it was like an opening of a window of opportunity to really begin to be honest with yourself and to look to see as to who am I, where do I want to go, and how does this speak to my relationship with others, and what am I or am I not going to be willing to do about that? So I imagine it had more of individual kind of impact.